Hello and welcome to a new How Did You Make It? The podcast in which we explore each step that has built the career path of various individuals through the discovery of their habits, passions, interests over the few last decades. I'm Yusra, your host, and today we meet Emina. Emina has so far lived in 5 countries. Some can be seen as a choice, others as her destiny, and others the sum of her hard work. She graciously walks us through the path of advice at each major step. She puts herself in your shoes and takes your hand to lift you as high as she can. As a high achiever, she embodies motivation, strength, and drive. Let's learn from her. Hi, Emina, and welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you with us today.
Hi, everyone. I'm so happy to be here to discuss very important issues that I've been passionate about since forever. I'm Emina. I am originally from Bosnia-Herzegovina. I live in Dublin and I work for Google as a policy lead in the trust and safety space for over 4 years now.
I can't wait to share what took you to every country you've lived in, what has been driving you. But for now, I would love to hear what is your definition of success.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would say my definition of success has evolved over the years. When I was in school, before I had any job yet, I've always strived to gain financial independence because for me, this meant the freedom to make my own decisions. And I'm very happy that I got there. Once you do get there, though, spoiler alert, you realize that it is not everything. And now I'd say a very important element of success for me is finding inner peace as well, which means less anxiety about work, being more chill, being more present in the moment, I think is something that a lot of people neglect as not that important, but it is really life consuming. I'm sure you will, once you get there, you'll know what I mean.
Freedom to make your own decisions. This is such an important aspect to success to me as well. Thank you for sharing, Emina. And this is actually something that you should keep in mind as we are sharing every single story on the show. So let's start with a deep dive on what has been driving you as you were younger, the classes you preferred, the interests you had. What can you share with us?
Just a little bit of context. I was a refugee when I turned 3 years old, when the war started in Bosnia, and we moved to Germany, where I started primary school until the age of 9. And then I continued primary school when we returned home. Now, irrespective of my experience in either countries, what I was always the most attracted to was arts and crafting. And I could really spend hours on doing extracurricular activities related to the creative field. That was one. And the other was languages. We started learning English in primary school. German was my, although not my mother tongue, was the first language I learned to read and write. I would add languages and literature to that.
And how often were you able to focus on your interests?
So I was doing it almost every day to a point where my parents had to drag me out of the house to play with other kids on the weekends. I would be so absorbed and consumed with the process. And it is to this day, this one activity that makes me feel being in the zone. So yeah, it was anything you can imagine. Painting, creating with cardboard, with all sorts of materials. Yeah, this is where my heart was.
And were you able to incorporate your interests in your day-to-day life, like at school?
Yeah, I mean, I remember always before the start of a new school year, I would decorate all my notebooks before, and a lot of friends in my class would ask me to do the same for them. Or if I would come up with something new, like I would be interested in making bracelets, for example, I was looking for opportunities to make more of it. So I would offer to make it to friends in class. Yeah, I became very quickly known anything related.
Do you know why you started or how crafts and creativity impacted your school years?
Looking back, I would say I've always felt like an outsider in school, both in primary and throughout my education, because I started as a refugee kid, where I really, really wanted to fit in. I was trying to have to speak as accent-free as possible in German, to share as many interests as possible with the, I wouldn't say the cool kids, but with all the other kids who were from there. And then the same happened when I returned to my country, and because I returned halfway through the school year, and I didn't know anyone, and everyone already had friends, and I was this new person. So it was ingrained in me from a very young age that I always have to do something extra to compensate for my background. I've always been a mix of introvert and extrovert. And my introverted side has definitely flourished doing this, doing all my creativity and craft projects. But I was never shy to share it with other people.
I love how you brought your crafts and creativity in school. Like, you already were building a whole identity for yourself as someone who is not only a student or new students, but also a creative individual who had interests and sparked curiosity among her peers. Did you realize it at the time? Like, do you know if you're still doing this today?
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think this is something that has defined not only my school years, but later on my work life, is that I have always thrived to be more than just what my main occupation is in that moment. I was always looking for activities outside the mandatory classes or just outside my line of work.
I love how you explored that at such a young age on what stimulates you and couldn't urge more people to do that as well. When I was younger, I used to practice more sports and read more than doing anything on the creative side, outside of the classes that we had in the French system, because I didn't think I was that good. But now I'm trying to do it as often as I can. It just calms your mind. Like, it's, I find it so therapeutic, and it allows you to forget about all the responsibilities that you have on the side, at least for a while.
Yes.
You just focus on the moment, on what you can create, what comes to mind, how you feel. We talked about creativity and languages and literature. Can you tell us more about your background? So you were already bilingual at the age of 5, 6?
Yes. So when I started school at 6, I was already bilingual, Bosnian and German. And then I became trilingual with English probably towards the end of university. Not through living abroad, but through school and activities, international activities like conferences and that kind of thing. And then I added Spanish to it at this point, maybe 8 or 7 years ago, just out of curiosity. But in the meantime, I have married an Argentinian man, and I speak close to fluent Spanish with my in-laws. So there's that was the last of my foreign languages.
I love what you just said right there. You were able to become fluent in English when you finished uni. Sometimes we think that we need to travel regularly to at a young age and be exposed to the abroad and have more opportunity to actually be exposed to those English native speakers or just English speakers. But we don't necessarily have the means to do that financially.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually very old into speaking English fluently when I learned that other people did something called language courses or between semesters or during school times off. I had no idea people did that. And even if I did, my financial situation would have never allowed my parents to do the same thing for me. So absolutely, you don't have to leave your country to learn a foreign language.
Couldn't agree more. Nowadays, we are so globalized and our access to resources is so extensive that it would be just excuses if you cannot learn Spanish, French, English, or any other languages.
Yeah, I have friends now who are learning Italian with a native speaker, just online.
That's amazing. Okay, so you said that you were a mix of extroverted and introverted. Do you know what you wanted to do at that age growing up?
No, I didn't. And I never found the answer to that question, not even to this day. So whenever someone would ask me, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would panic. I would think that I have to know the answer. And if I don't, then I'm already too late. Which then later, which kind of guided me in choosing my high school, which was a grammar school. So it was not unlike all other high schools available for me in Bosnia. It was not focused on any specific profession or industry. And then university, we'll talk later on about that, but it also informed what I studied later on at university because I always wanted to keep my options open to do something as broad as possible so that I keep my options open. You don't have to have it figured out.
I couldn't agree more. And you change so much as you grow older as well. The version of yourself at the age of 13 and then moving into high school will be different, and as well as your interests as you try to explore more.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are very, very few people in this world who stay interested in the same thing and end up doing just that. Like someone who wanted to be a doctor all their life, for example. But that's not how reality works. And I think because we have this idea that we have to pursue this one thing, this makes us feel like a failure, maybe, if we halfway through discover that, oh, actually, I don't like this. I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. But whoa, now I have invested all these years and resources in it. I cannot just give up. And that way of thinking just makes you end up being very miserable in life.
This whole episode, you might just hear how much I agree with Amina. But yes, I couldn't agree more. You're putting so much pressure on yourself. It might sound like, well, we are older and it sounds a little bit easy for us to say that to you. But the message that we hope you get from it is that don't take things too seriously and be curious and eager to learn as much as possible, as you're completely allowed to change your mind on your interest and career path that which you want to take, and all you need are strong foundations and drive, and then you can move from one to another.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So 100%, I wished I was told this when I was very little, that you have the right to change your mind. And it's not a failure if you want to start over or if you change your mind.
And it's never too late. I think what everyone will share with you on this show, on this podcast, is that they were driven by curiosity, learnings, and very excited to find another interest. Most of them were scared, but they will still jump to take their next risk and to find what works for them. But we'll get back to that, of course. Okay, let's go back to your high school years. What kind of students were you? Was it clearer for you before going to uni on what you thought you needed or wanted to do?
So I went to grammar school, which usually, like, to get into grammar school, you usually have to have very good grades from primary school. And it's a rather competitive environment. I was always chasing the best marks, the best grades, like throughout my education. I was still interested in art. And my interest in languages persisted. My interest in history increased. I wrote my final thesis in high school on the Second World War. I started to develop a strong interest in politics at the time as well. So I'd say the creative and art side of me shifted a little. However, until my final year at grammar school, I did not know what I want to study. And I was changing my mind. My options were diplomacy, politics, journalism. I guess the reason why I was drawn to these was because I liked talking publicly. Like, I liked being on the stage. Not that I did a lot of it, but this is something that energized me, let's say. And then, instead of all of these, I chose law. I guess my thinking was law is the most serious out of these, has the best potential of turning into a good income for me down the line, while still keeping options open because there's so many careers I can do with law. Which I think I was a little naive at the time about, but that was the thinking.
And do you remember why you were interested in politics, diplomacy, history?
Maybe I will first start by saying that I discarded the idea of going into a creative field because although my heart was very much in it, I could not imagine it as a serious career at the time. And so I was looking for something more serious, quote unquote. We were involved in some projects in the grammar school that were around human rights, around awareness about how politics affects your life. I think that project was going on when I was in the second year in grammar school. And through that project, we got to meet some politicians, some journalists. So that was one reason why my interest grew. And the other one was I was a lot involved in working for an NGO during the time as a volunteer. And this was a youth organization, and we did projects with there are some UN agencies still in Bosnia who stayed there after the war, and they're investing a lot in projects for young people. So because I was now in touch with people who do this type of work, I started imagining myself doing something similar. So I guess it was exposure to people in that field, and at the same time, a lack of exposure of people who made artwork for themselves.
Yes, so I was about to ask you if you had a chance to be exposed to people working in creative fields. That makes so much sense. I'm so glad you had the opportunity to be exposed to different fields. It's very difficult to have this opportunity to have access to passionate individuals who have the time to share like at least a glimpse of the work that they are doing and to inspire us to be one of them. And it is an even greater opportunity to discover new jobs out there which could match our interests and passions. I do hope this podcast feels part of this need.
100%. I think very few of us have the opportunity to actually understand what a job entails practically on a day-to-day basis before we make this huge decision of studying that field. I at least ended up making my decision based on the idea I had of what that course or this university could give me back as a career. But I never really saw how it looks in real life. Maybe I also to add to it, I kind of had the idea, looking at the example of my parents, of what I did not want for my future job to look like. I was looking at my dad. My dad is a veterinarian who is basically available 24/7. He works with big animals. All our life, he would be called up at 3 a.m. If needed for emergencies, etc. So looking at that, I knew I wanted a stable office job, 9 to 5, where I have my weekends, where I don't have to think too much about the job once I've closed my computer. My mom, she worked in an office, and this is why I waited in for myself. I would prefer office to what my dad does. But my mom was an accountant, and I found that very, very boring. So I was like, I'm definitely not doing economics. But if I can do an office job that also entails now all of these other things I talked about, you know, maybe human rights, maybe public speaking, maybe I can go in that direction.
Makes so much sense. It's also super interesting because, again, it shows that you were able to pick from what you could see firsthand. So to just have a quick call out to the people who are listening to us, please reach out to me through social media for me to ask the question that you wish you could ask to diverse professionals to get the most out of those episodes. But yes, again, couldn't agree more, Mina. Unless you get the chance to have a family members or friends of family members or your parents' friends who proactively come to you and welcome you into their sphere to tell you all about it, how can you know what you want and don't want to do?
Oh, yes. And I would say, please don't limit your option just based on what your parents advise you, because it's so funny looking back now. At some point, I was thinking about studying IT, maybe programming, because we had just started in grammar school learning programming languages. And my dad told me, why would you study that? Everyone will know how to use a computer in the future anyways. So for context, I went to high school in the early 2000s. It was very, very different. We had one big PC in our kitchen. So, and I didn't really bother getting too much into that. Like that explanation at the time, I found reasonable.
Yes, because the older generation will always share advice from the extent of their own knowledge. This is where we call out again to be curious and do your own research, as it's impossible for our parents, for the people around us, to know everything about all sectors that exist. And there are so many new different opportunities as well, you know, like technologies challenging the way we approach different things. So there are new jobs coming up and new skills that are needed. So never stop exploring and researching. Because if Emina had a chance to meet journalists and other professionals and make a decision, so if your high school and higher education programs do not bring you professional to meet, it's on you to look for them into social media platforms, on YouTube, on everywhere you can actually find true and raw testimonies. And shamelessly, do listen to this show. Okay, so moving on to your volunteering experiences in high school, Emina, can you tell us more about them? How many hours were you spending?
So let me start by saying that I was very limited with what I can do after school back home in Bosnia in my small town. A lot of kids my age, primary, middle and high school, would already go to clubs, partying. Like, there was not really much out there like there is today, I would say. Like, now you can go and do robotics after school. And well, none of this was available to me. The only thing that was available was youth clubs that were run by volunteers and funded by foreign NGOs. And these youth clubs would organize events such as sporting events on the weekend for kids, or we would go and clean the riverbank, or we would get some funds that we could allocate to projects that kids our age could apply for. So at one point we were reconstructing a playground, like all together. It was, a lot of it was very hands-on. And then through these NGOs, I continued being active at university as well. I was then able to travel to youth conferences, and those were my first, but really my first interactions with people my age outside my country. One of the opportunities to practice English as well. And yeah, these experiences were really eye-opening. I would urge everyone to join these if you're able to in your towns.
This is so interesting. So you must have learned so much during that time.
Yeah, for sure. Like, from like very technical skills such as project management and preparing a budget for, well, things like a playground reconstruction, to public speaking, building teams, working in a team. Oh, for sure, like real life experiences there.
That's incredible at such a young age. So now that we've learned about those years, you're now invited to apply to higher education. Can you tell us more about it?
So I ended up with law school because I didn't know what I want to be when I grow up. And I chose law because I knew people who did law school and then ended up in different careers. I was thinking, okay, if I want to become a diplomat, I can do this through law school. Maybe I actually like the essence of it and I become an attorney or I become a judge. My reasoning was also, if I want to work in an international organization, a lot of people with law background do exactly that. And this is how I made that decision. I found it the least limiting of all the other options. And I thought, because it's law school is 4 years in Bosnia, I will have 4 more years until I finish university to explore and figure out what kind of jobs I will want to apply for later on.
Can you tell us maybe what kind of personality it would be a good fit?
For law? It was such a mixed bunch in law school. And I'm now, when I reflect on where people on my course ended, I'd say half of them ended becoming actually attorneys. And the other half went, me included, branched out in different things, from a friend who is now a photographer, to me working in policy, and then another friend working for the UN. So it's really, really a mix of personalities that law works for. But for those who went into hardcore law, like in the law practice, those were very confident and strong personalities. Not necessarily, you don't have to have the best grades to become the best attorney. I have friends who went into academics with the law, and this is something I explored as well. And if you want to go that way, grades are great. Having grades and having this academic rigor is great. But from my experience, it wasn't necessary to be successful later on.
So what we can take from that is, wherever you are, an introvert, extrovert, confident or not, you can be successful in law school. Can you share a bit more reflections about your choice, as well as you wanted to work in a specific environment?
Yes. Yes. And I would say in that regard, I was right with my initial instinct of choosing law. Where I think I made a mistake, I saw myself working in an international organization on something that is pan-national. Mm-hmm. And that was tricky with law, because I realized, if I want to actually be a lawyer, with what I learned in law school, I'm bound to my country because laws are national. So that was really limiting for me. If I wanted to actually be a lawyer in Germany, for example, I would have had to study law all over again. So I did end up working now in policy in an international environment. I'm here in Dublin, in the most diverse Google office in the world. But that's not because I do law. So it was helpful having that background, not because of the academics, but more because I learned a lot of life skills through my career later on working as a lawyer. I discovered, though, that like the law field in itself, the way I studied it, was too limiting for what I developed my interest in later on. So yeah, I think you have to balance these two. If you really love law, you might be limited to the country where you study that law, unless you wanna take on a crazy amount of effort to change that, working in another country. Like, really do your research on what kind of law are you interested in. There are fields of law that are less limiting. But if your dream is to be a litigator or a judge, you will have to stay where you are, most likely.
Thank you, Emina, for the insight. So crucial to know and look into the different paths in law school to make sure that it aligns with your goals. And if you want to keep your option open, do make sure that you're going towards the right path. Oh, what kind of students were you, by the way?
Oh, so I was an extremely dedicated student, like a proper overachiever. I had the top grades. I was in the top 1% in my generation. And at the same time, I was truly enjoying studying. I really loved everything I studied. And I continued to follow all sorts of interests outside law school as well. I did not want to be bound just by the field. As I said, this is something that follows me my entire life. I to this day, I always have in the back of my mind an expectation that, okay, this year I have to have an additional achievement outside my area of work. So during law school, I would apply to all possible student activities I could, such as international conferences, summer schools, like summer law schools. I would travel with my with an NGO that I was working for. So I was very diligent, making sure that I finished all my exams in time. I have never had to repeat any exam, so that I have my summer free. So between the two semesters in Bosnia, you have, if you finish all your exams in June, I think, you're free until October. Wow. So I would spend a lot of time making sure I will finish all my exams in time. And then I would spend the time in between on traveling, a lot of it with scholarships. So again, the financial restraints led me to applying to all of these programs. And it's these programs for students that that enabled me actually to see the world while I was a student.
I'm not surprised that you were a high achiever. Can you tell us more about the scholarships? Were you eligible because you were a strong student? And how did you find them?
So now I'm sure everything is online. At the time, so that's the 2000, I started university 2008. Around that time, it was a mix of, I would research everything I could on the internet, anything. I would search for any opportunities for students from Bosnia specifically. And I would only look at opportunities with covering all expenses. That's something that was very important. And so I ended up doing, for example, I think it was two summers in a row, doing a 2-week summer school in Austria on European Union law, which I was super passionate about. Conferences around reconciliation in the former Yugoslavia, the human rights aspect and international criminal law I was interested in. And then I also discovered that the year I started university, Erasmus, which is, I'm sure everyone in studying in Europe is aware of, Erasmus actually for the first time opened the opportunity for Bosnian students to visit some of the universities in Europe. And I immediately took the chance and devoted a long time into perfecting my application for that. And then I got that scholarship to study one semester in Germany. So I would say it's a mix of doing my own research online, looking at notice boards at the university. And then it also is kind of one thing leads to the other, because you go off to the first thing, you meet people. This is how you build your network, especially if you don't have it to begin with. You will meet people who will tell you of this other thing that you then also apply for. I mean, my siblings and my friends to this day make fun of me of how much I was chasing all these applications. I was applying all the time, applying and reapplying. Like, I didn't really shy away from being rejected 1 year and then reapplying again the next year, to go to these conferences and to have all these experiences. So this would be really my biggest advice to all of you. Don't limit yourself to academic excellence, because your life will be so much richer if you use your free time for all these other things. This is something I really don't regret investing time in at the time.
And couldn't agree more. There are so many learnings there. First, do get those scholarships, study abroad, get those experiences, those internships. Second thing, try again. And if it doesn't work, take it as a redirection and try again later, as Emina rightfully did, and trust the process. I know it's easier said than done, but trust the process. And the third thing is, you need to go above and beyond academics, because going on the field allows you to understand if you actually like it. And if you don't like it, you can actually reflect on it and see what was missing from that experience and change and decide to do something different. Lastly, if you are getting more experienced, it is going to be easier for you to find the next internship, the next job, and even better, to launch your own company or NGO.
100%. I think you would be surprised how many of these opportunities are out there that are fully covered financially. I really did not have to ask my parents to finance any of it. And I didn't have to work either for it. Please don't think that you wouldn't be picked anyways if you apply. You don't know until you apply. Remember the number of motivation letters I had to write in my lifetime. And you guys now have ChatGPT to help you with that.
Exactly. Now you have all the tools that you need to start applying everywhere. So moving after law school, what happened?
So in my final year at law school, I started again doing my research on scholarships for master's degrees. And I got the scholarship of the German government to study German and European law in Berlin, Humboldt University. Again, a fully covered scholarship that my parents didn't have to contribute to. And during that year in Germany, following my passion for that field of law, I learned about something called the Blue Book traineeship in the European Commission. This is a really unique experience for graduates to work in the institutions of the EU in Brussels. And there's a very small quota that they accept from non-EU countries. Bosnia is still not in the European Union. So I didn't have high hopes, but I gave my all for that application, I can tell you. And I got in. So I finished my bachelor's, then I finished my master's degree, and then I did my traineeship, 6 months traineeship in Brussels in the European Commission. And that was my first work experience. Like, I have never worked until that point.
And how was that experience at the EU Commission?
That was life-changing, really. I was working with people who are doing exactly what I was studying for years, European Union and law. And I met, like, people I worked with were from all around the world. And with many of them, I'm still in touch. So there was this element of, like, having a really great group of friends there. And it was one of the very few experiences where my expectations really matched reality, or reality exceeded, because I had a great team that I worked with there. It really sparked interest in me to apply for a full-time position. It wasn't possible because of my passport limitation, and I did not want to stay in Brussels on limiting contracts. So the alternative to a full-time position is being a contractor and then potentially extending these contracts. I did not want to go into that. In the meantime, I got an offer for my first full-time position in a law firm back home. I returned to Bosnia and then worked for the next 5 years in an international corporate law firm.
The Blue Book traineeship in Brussels is receiving so many applications every year. So congrats for making it. Sounds like it exceeded your expectation. Did it exceed your expectation because of the team you had or the responsibilities you were given, or a mix of both?
So I would, first of all, I would say talking to other people who did that same traineeship, the experiences were very mixed. So some people didn't like it at all, because they were not given any responsibilities. They were not given, they did not feel they were contributing. In my case, with my manager at the time, I really felt like what I contributed to mattered. I was, for example, I was writing drafts that were then submitted to the European Court in Strasbourg. And I was with my manager going to, I went to a hearing there. And I would say the cherry on top was months after I finished my internship, my manager called me to tell me that this paper that I wrote on a case where the European Commission was involved, so which contained arguments that I came up with, that this was accepted by the court, that the court followed basically my arguments in that particular case. And he wanted me to know this. Like, he had no, he did not have to let me know, right? But he did that so that I could fully understand how much they appreciated my work. And that is really incredible. Like, to this day, I haven't had such an experience.
What a lovely gesture. You must have been so proud. Understand why it was a great experience.
Yeah, for sure. I would add also one learning I had through this is always stay in touch with these people. It's been over 10 years or more. I don't even want to count. But I'm still in touch with my manager from the time. And not just him. I'm still in touch with loads of people that I interned for. In the last couple of years, maybe I slowed down a little with that. I should go back to it. But I had the habit of wishing them a happy new year, wishing them happy holidays, just checking in. And this is, for one, you're doing this to continue this relationship. And then on the other hand, I was able from these people to get references years later for applications. So this manager from my 2013, I think was it, internship in the European Commission, wrote me a reference in 2018. So what is that, six years later? Sorry, I'm now I was good in math. Because we stayed in touch. So this person wrote me a reference later on for a second master's degree that I did a couple of years ago. Yeah, so please take this advice and stay in touch with these people.
They were so happy to welcome you and taught you everything that they could. It's also a way to show gratefulness for everything that they did for you.
Exactly.
Thank you, Emina, for this reminder. And moving into what you just mentioned, you decided to pursue a second master's degree. Tell us everything about it.
So after working 5 years in corporate law, halfway through that period, I realized that I no longer find it interesting. And it is not the direction I want to take for the rest of my career. And I needed a break to research what I am actually interested in. I didn't know where I want to go, but I knew that corporate law is no longer it. And I did not see myself becoming an attorney. That was like the next step. So I applied for the Chimning Scholarship. That's the scholarship of the UK government. I applied the first time, didn't get it, applied for the second time, and then it worked out. With this scholarship, I studied a degree called Leadership, Innovation, and Creativity. at Cass Business School in London, and now it's called Abai Business School. It was an interdisciplinary course combining law, business, technology, acting, and creative writing. It was amazing. It was the first time I was studying with having had work experience with people who have been in the work field for much longer than me. So some people were decades older than me, for instance, from different industries, learning on what sparks creativity, how do organizations innovate effectively, and how technology can be used for this. And one learning I had from this is that a master's degree is way more useful after you have had work experience. Definitely. First of all, you will choose wiser your degree. And secondly, you will get more out of it. And then this degree, I was doing it not knowing what the next steps will be for me. The plan was to start applying for internships, maybe just new jobs that were completely out of my comfort zone and unrelated to my previous work experience.
Absolutely. Gap years should be taken in the form of internship, work, travel, volunteering. If you can take it between your bachelor's programs or master programs, it actually helps you reflect instead of rushing into the next thing.
Definitely.
If we look back, what was missing from your corporate law experience?
The work environment was too rigid, too much hierarchy, very old school. So I guess I was craving more flexibility, a more modern workspace. And that's one thing. The other thing is I was just still craving an international experience and more international environment. I've always wanted to work with people from all around the world. And working in that specific law firm gave me an element of it because I worked with foreign clients. So I did work regularly in English and German, but it wasn't enough. It didn't feel enough. And then the third element, obviously, just the content of my work. I was no longer interested in setting up companies, helping with mergers and acquisitions. I never found joy in that.
It's quite difficult to admit to yourself to look outside of that work. You have the comfort, you have the stability, and it did check more or less the expectation that you had at the time, and it aligned with your studies.
Exactly. It's like you have done everything right. You finally got the job that you were studying for. You have a good salary. Everything is stable. What more should you even want to crave for?
So how did you manage to move away from that?
Oh, yeah. Like, it was not that easy at all. On the outside, maybe, yes. But internally, it was such a mental struggle. It was really, really tough not knowing what's going to happen next. Because when you stay in your lane, you know what's going to come next. You know that in advance the next stages in your career, like attorney, associate, partner, like it's easy. When you get out of that lane and out of an environment where everyone else around you is doing the same, because usually your friends are from university and you have very little contact with people who do something different. So it was very scary, I'm not going to lie.
We might sometimes sound pretty chill on these podcasts about the decisions that are being made, but it is scary. And you're more than allowed to be scared about any new thing that you're trying to start.
Of course. It might mean that you're doing something right.
Exactly. Couldn't agree more. You are doing things differently. And what you might be scared of is probably the failure aspect, but seeing it as a learning path, learning experience, learning can bring a new perspective and give you the push that you need to start.
You will learn, exactly. Yeah, I don't think that any one of us regrets trying something.
Exactly.
Even if it didn't work out. I think I've always been scared of having these what ifs in my life. Oh, what if I try this or that? And when I assess that the situation could be a what if, that kind of gives me strength to go for it.
Yeah, and living with regrets might be more difficult, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like especially when you, in these very early years out of university, one of my regrets is staying too long in the same job. Really, like you should go out and try it all out and experiment.
Couldn't agree more. So now that you've reached the end of your second master's program, you're looking for an internship, which is more difficult than expected. What happened next?
Yes, so it's more difficult than expected because I'm still in London on a student visa that is about to expire and no one wants to sponsor interns. So I'm struggling there. And while I am constantly working on new applications, I get a message on LinkedIn. A recruiter is asking me if I'm interested in a position at Google. And I think it's a scam, but I still respond. And then they ask me to submit my CV and they have more questions. And I start realizing, whoa, this could actually be the real thing. And it's for the position that I'm in to this day. But at the time, I had no idea that there was an industry called trust and safety. I had no idea that my background could fit into that industry. And spoiler alert, it actually does. I started the interviewing process without knowing anyone in big tech. I think that was a huge mental obstacle for me at the beginning. I thought I didn't have anyone to rely on. There was no one, obviously, I wasn't referred. That was something that's done very often in big tech. So my only resource was the internet. I prepared with YouTube. It's insane how many HR specialists are out there giving you all the details you need about how to respond those behavioral questions. And you will understand the entire process by watching YouTube videos. So that was the resource I relied on. I went through 5 or 6 interviews. I don't remember at this stage. 3 months in, they sponsored my visa to come to Ireland. And then, I moved here with the one gap that was the pandemic where I couldn't come here. But I finally did. And now I'm here for almost 5 years.
First, thank you, Google, for bringing you here and for our paths to have crossed. And thank you, Amina, for sharing how much knowledge is available online and that all interviews are all about preparation and how much effort you're putting into it. Because then if it doesn't work and you're not getting hired, it's very much on something that you cannot control because you gave everything you could.
100%. So I was lucky that this interview process started after I had submitted my master thesis. So I really had time to dedicate to it full time. And I really did. It was a full-time job. I would wake up in the middle of the night with ideas and examples on how to respond to the top 10 questions that might come up. The anxiety was gone once I had this process in place, once I had my schedule, and I knew I was really working towards a schedule. And that the first interview was very, very scary. But then it got easier. So that goes to show that, first of all, you are much better than you think you are. You have way more competence than you think you are, especially if you're a woman. You are probably limiting yourself by at least 50% by not applying, because I would have never applied for this role. I would have never thought I'm good enough. That's one. And then the other thing is not having inside contacts or an insider network is also not the end of the world. You can prepare for it completely by yourself.
People are trying countless times before getting the job that they want, so do not hesitate to send your application as many times as you can.
Oh yeah, as so many of my colleagues at my job have applied so many times before they got in. Like, honestly, don't get discouraged by the first rejection.
And
expect the first rejection, rather.
Exactly. And women tend to apply less to jobs where they don't check all the boxes of the job offers. So keep in mind to try and see where it takes you.
Especially if you're a high achiever with great grades, you are used to reaching 100%. So if you see a job listing where you only take 70% of the bullet points, you will likely not apply, and that's a mistake. Because those bullet points are not there because they're a wish list. It doesn't mean that anyone who applies is going to fulfill all of that.
Exactly. And if you see yourself somewhere, just go for it. Even if you see yourself remotely there, try it. And you'll see, worst case scenario, you learn from it.
Exactly. So just one example. When the recruiter shared with me the job posting, asking if I was interested for it, and some of the requirements were something about language requirements. The only thing I remember was I saw that, well, but wait, I don't fulfill that requirement. And I asked the recruiter, but are you sure? Because I don't fulfill that specific requirement. The recruiter is like, yeah, we are. Like, no worries, just send us your CV. So that's definitely a learning that you should not take that posting too literally.
Unfortunately, having to wrap up this conversation, do you have any last advice you want to share with us?
Maybe I would just leave you with a learning. A career coach once told me something I tried still to incorporate in myself, which is don't you ever think that you are going to reach that one job eventually. There is no one job that is, we're not that generation anymore. You're not going to be at that one job forever. Just expect and prepare yourself mentally that your interests will keep changing. And something that was your dream job might not be anymore after a couple of years. Just be prepared that you will go out there in search for something new. And you will do that until you retire. And maybe you don't want to retire.
Hopefully for you who are listening to us, you'll find something that sparks joy and that drives you and stimulates you. So hopefully one of the following episodes or this one allowed you to identify something that can align with your interests. And if it's not yet, looking forward to sharing more with you. Thank you so much, Emina. Thank you for all of the pieces of advice that you shared and all the wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. And yeah, I just hope that your listeners get the chance to hear all this advice. I needed years of life experience to get to. And I hope they hear it much, much earlier on than I did.
Thank you, Emina. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please do reach out on social media if you want to learn more, if you have any questions, if you wish I had, ask different questions, because I can ask them to the next person I'm interviewing.